go with me here, John.
Okay.
With his machete-like diligence.
Oh, I like that.
Advocating in time of need, John Jameson gets his clients where they want to go.
Second, we has got nothing on me.
Let's not push it too far, John.
Right.
John Jameson, loving insurance so you don't have to. Jameson Insurance, for home, business, and auto. In Waitsfield, Richmond, and Waterbury. Walk on in. JamesonINS.com.
And now, with hour number two of the March and Johnson Show, here's Mark, live from the State House in Montpelier.
We're back for hour number two. Thanks for joining us on the program this morning, broadcasting live here at the State House in Montpelier. Beautiful day out there today. Oh, my goodness, isn't that encouraging? Coming up in about 5 minutes here, we'll talk with Governor Shumlin. We welcome your phone calls as well. You can reach us at 244-1777. That's our local number. Toll free, 877-291-8255. All right. Let's see if we can venture down to Washington, D.C. Joining us today is Victoria Jones.
Oh, good morning, Victoria. It's Justin this morning.
Oh, Justin. Yes. That's right. Yes. Thank you very much, Jack.
Okay.
All right. Joining us is Justin Duckham, who has a slightly deeper voice than Victoria Jones. Any reaction to the big Bernie announcement yesterday?
Well, this is certainly shaking up the race. This is being viewed as a legitimate challenger to Hillary Clinton, who could certainly siphon off a lot of the progressive base. This is part of an effort, most likely, to push Hillary Clinton to the left. And right now, there's just a lot of speculation over how Sanders is going to target Clinton if he decides to go after her heavily, and you know, what kind of campaign he's going to be running, since he is, as you know, a huge barn burner and somebody who can certainly really ignite the base of the party.
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, I think he probably targets, what, Iowa and New Hampshire, and sees how he does there. And as some of his people have been saying, the people in those states value authenticity in candidates, and he's kind of the real deal.
Hey, it's really hard to find a more authentic candidate than Bernie Sanders. He's somebody who is, very no frills and very bare bones. So, yes, he's going to be going to New Hampshire first and trying to test the waters over there. He has already made a number of trips to Iowa so far this season, I believe, as well as a number of lesser-known swing states like Pennsylvania and whatnot. And he's been receiving a pretty good reception. And prior to this, I'm sure you've heard a lot of his speeches beforehand. He mentioned that he would not be doing this unless if he had a coherent strategy to win, unless if he believed that he could raise significant money to challenge a lot of the more well-funded candidates who are likely going to be coming in here. And yesterday, he appeared very confident that he had, in fact, found a way to do so. So it's going to be an interesting development in the race, and we are very excited to see how it's going to turn out.
All right. What else is going on we should know about today, my friend?
Well, we're going down to Baltimore right now. Yesterday, the report was compiled by the Baltimore Police Department over the death of Freddie Gray, and that's being officially handed over to the city. So that's and to prosecutors. So we're going to try to go down there and see the mood of the city in the aftermath of that. Right now, there was a lot of reports that came out yesterday, leaked reports from police officers, essentially asserting that Mr. Gray may have, in fact, broke his own neck in the back of the police car. That's being challenged pretty heavily by the family lawyers for Mr. Gray's family, as well as some other medical professionals. And there's some lingering concerns over, a recently announced report of an undisclosed stop that was apparently taken by the police officers and was not initially reported. This was captured on video from a private camera and submitted in the report, which, again, raises additional questions over the conduct of the six officers who were suspended without pay.
Wow. How do you break your own neck? Come on. Really?
Yeah. No, so that's a very good question. And, I'm sure that's something that's going to be pushed heavily. The police department is acknowledging that the report itself is not fully finished and that the investigation is ongoing. But we have the report in the hands of prosecutors today, and we'll see where exactly they're going to be moving forward with that.
Okay. All right. I haven't read this story, but it talks about in the Washington Post today, Tesla is coming out with some big announcement. Do you have a clue what's going on with this?
I don't have that report. I'm sorry.
Okay. All right. So apparently something to do with their a big development in batteries. And frankly, it's something, if it's true, boy, this could be a huge breakthrough.
Well, I mean, they certainly are a huge economic powerhouse from where I'm from in the Silicon Valley. They're somebody who have really, remade the game in quite a few ways when it comes to the performance of their, products. And they have faced a number of economic battles uphill from a number of states who have tried to sort of push back against it. But, we'll be excited to see what they come out with.
All right. Thank you, my friend. I appreciate it. Have a good weekend.
Thank you.
Justin Duckham joining us live from our nation's capital. We'll take a quick break. Coming up next, we'll talk with Governor Shumlin. We'll be back right after these important announcements.
Been meaning to try that great restaurant? Now's your chance. Vermont Federal Credit Union presents Vermont Restaurant Week, a food festival organized by 7 days, now through Sunday, May 3rd. More than 100 restaurants from all over the state will offer special menus at $20, $30, or $40 per person. Try lunch, brunch, and breakfast specials, too. Events include a panel discussion with local experts at Arts Riot, a culinary pub quiz at Vermont Sports Grill, a cocktail competition at Red Square, and an Instagram scavenger hunt. Parents, the Burlington YMCA is offering childcare Friday, May 1st and Saturday, May 2nd. 7 Days Vermont Restaurant Week is sponsored by Vermont Federal Credit Union, Vermont Creamery, Vermont Spirits, Switchback Brewing Company, Woodchuck Hard Cider, and City Market, with media support from Jump On It and the Vermont Department of Tourism. Proceeds benefit the Vermont Food Bank. For the complete list of 100-plus restaurants and events, or to donate to the food bank, visit VermontRestaurantWeek.com.
Attention Vermont residents. Since 2004, Lamoille Valley Ford has proudly provided free scheduled maintenance to all active military, National Guard, and Reserve as our way of saying thanks. While our commitment to the military is ongoing, in each quarter of this year, Lamoille Valley Ford will also recognize some of our hometown heroes. During the months of April, May, and June, Lamoille Valley Ford would like to recognize and say thanks to all school teachers. Teachers are not just educators to our children. They are mentors, coaches, and counselors, and we are grateful for their unselfish commitment. So to all school teachers, through the end of June, no matter what brand vehicle you drive or where you bought it, Lamoille Valley Ford will provide you with your next oil change, tire rotation, state inspection, brake inspection, and more at no cost to you and with no strings attached. Call today for an appointment or drive Route 14, 15, or 16 to Lamoille Valley Ford in Hardwick. At Lamoille Valley Ford, we know our teachers matter.
At the State House in Montpelier, let's give a nice warm Radio Vermont welcome this morning to Governor Shumlin. Good morning. Thank you for joining us. How are you?
It's great to be with you.
So yesterday you said that you're looking for an additional $8 million in savings. Is there going to be a revenue downgrade next week?
I hope not. But, my view is that we have an obligation to balance this budget in a way that doesn't require us to raise every tax that we can think of on Vermonters, and I think we can get another $8 to $10 million in cuts, and instead of having to raise another $8 to $10 million in taxes.
All right, so that call yesterday was to replace other taxes that are being proposed, not because there's going to be a need for further there have been a couple of revenue adjustments already that have been made.
That's correct. Let's just look at how we got where we are. The budget that I introduced in January included shifting $16 million of ongoing Medicaid costs to the dedicated tax that I'd proposed to cover health care costs and draw down $110 million. Obviously, it looks like that plan is not being embraced by the legislature. I've continued to promote it throughout the session. So I need to look at our budget and say, without that $16 million, what do we do? And my view is, we don't say to Vermonters, hey, we're going to raise your taxes more, but we find additional cuts. And, just imagine that you're sitting around a Vermonter's dinner table right now, and you're reading what's going on in Montpelier. And really, the conversation would have to be, well, let's talk about the taxes that are being proposed. And you look at the list that they've passed or discussed and are trying to pass, and it's literally like, they're taking away my home mortgage deduction for the middle class. They're taking away my charitable contributions in a state that desperately needs people donating to charities. They're taking away my catastrophic medical expense deduction if I get really, really sick, which really applies to middle-class seniors who usually are on fixed incomes. I mean, that's who uses that deduction the most. They want to tax soda, candy, everything with sugar in it, because sugar's bad. But then you look and they're also taxing water. So if the theory is we don't want you to drink soda, we don't want you to eat sugar, but now we're taxing water, apparently, you know, what's left to drink? Then you look at some of the other proposals they've come up with, and you just go, really? You know, I mean, the conversation around the table says has to be the conclusion that I've come to, which is there's got to be ways, in light of the fact that we're not going to take care of the health care challenges that we're facing, not pay for Medicaid, which is what I proposed, to make additional cuts instead of raising every tax that we can think of, and it's frankly some that have never been thought of before.
Even some of the caps that have been put on that, you know, in terms of the deductions, it's not just from dollar one. I mean, some of these ideas are talking about getting at people with second and third homes.
You know, I know that's what's being presented, but I'm just not buying it. If you look at the actual facts, between what the House and the Senate has passed, you are reducing the ability for middle-class Vermonters to deduct charitable deductions, to deduct home mortgage interest, and to deduct catastrophic health care expenses. That's who it hits. And those are just the facts. Now, having said that, the problem with that is that those tax deductions are there to drive policy that's good for jobs and good for the economy. We want Vermonters buying homes right now. We want Vermonters giving to charity. Imagine where we'd be if we reduced the incentive to give to Vermont charities. That's what holds the state together. We want seniors on fixed incomes when they get really, really sick and don't have that great an insurance policy to be able to help pay for it. So there are real reasons why those deductions were put in place, and there's reasons why we shouldn't take them away.
But hasn't the Senate heard you? I mean, on the charitable deductions, for example, they're allowing it for contributions that are made to Vermont organizations. Are you really worried about Texas libraries and out-of-state charities?
There are many who believe that that's going to face a constitutional challenge. You can't start saying as a state, we're going to give you a charitable deduction, but it has to be in this state. It can't be to other states. And the other point is, you know, often you'll give to like the Sierra Club or whatever you're donating to, or United Way of America, and they funnel that money back to the Vermont organizations. The biggest question I would ask is, in a little teeny state with 625,000 people, and where we tend to be the recipients of both federal and philanthropic largesse outside of the state, it's pretty bad precedent to start. What if the bigger states around us start saying, you give to Vermont charities, we're not going to let you deduct. We take in a lot of money in our charities from out of state, and I'll bet you that we take in a lot more than we send out. So I just think it's a slippery slope that we should be cautious in jumping into.
Now, identifying more cuts. I mean, you have acknowledged in the past that finding the cuts that you had to find was difficult. I mean, another $8 million in cuts is how would you describe that challenge?
We laid out an additional $8 million of cuts that we believe we can manage, that are better options than asking Vermonters to pay higher taxes.
Okay. Can you tell me what you're talking about?
Well, sure. I mean, I can show you the list, but basically it was reported in the press yesterday. We came up with a number of suggestions that we feel we can safely put in place without hurting state government. And some of them were affected executive pay, you know, folks that are exempt. Some of it affected additional downsizing in the state workforce. And there were other suggestions there, some around energy, some around health care, that we feel we can manage.
Why is that? Why are those better options?
Well, there's no such thing as great options when you're cutting budgets. But we have a responsibility to balance this budget in a way that's sustainable going forward. I don't want to be back here next year saying, wow, you know, we didn't solve our problems and we've got another $70, $80, $90 million problem. What you have to remember is that my proposal for dealing with health care through a 0.7% payroll tax solved, in addition to loss of health care problems, about a $45 million budget problem for next year, all Medicaid and health care related. So it created a surplus, in effect, looking at next year, taking a long view of making this budget sustainable going forward for year after year. So once that comes off the table, it seems to me that we've got to say as a state, hey, how do we continue to make reductions so that we're actually putting the state on a path towards sustainable budgets where we're not constantly turning to Vermonters and saying, we got to raise your taxes?
Steve Howard of the Vermont State Employees Association is sitting right here as well. Can you say to him that you've treated the state employees fairly?
There's no doubt that we've treated them fairly. Listen, we got a great state workforce. They're working hard for Vermont. But there's never been a budget challenge like we're facing, whether it was Governors Douglas, Dean, or Snelling, or Cunin, who haven't, when things got tough, asked the state employees to participate in the solution. And listen, let's just review the record. When I came on, the state employees in the last fiscal challenges had taken 2-3% pay cuts. These are cuts for two consecutive years. When I came back on, I made sure that we didn't stand in a way of those being restored. We then negotiated two straight contracts without ever going to binding arbitration, but just, you know, unprecedented in a governor's history, I believe, in recent history, because we wanted to do the right thing for the state employees. All I'm saying is now we're in tough times. Give us the same latitude that you gave past governors. Work with us to help get this manageable for Vermont's taxpayers. And you know, I don't think that's an unreasonable or a radical request. Having said that, that the state employees keep saying, just raise taxes on folks. You know, don't ask us to participate in this adjustment. And I don't think that that's widely popular among Vermonters.
Why didn't you start at the beginning of the session with this idea of an early retirement program?
Well, it's not an early retirement program. Let's be clear. Early retirement programs tend to cost states money.
All right.
What this is during a recession, a lot of state employees, or several state employees, stayed on beyond their retirement dates because of tough fiscal times. So in other words, this is a trend in state governments, but when you have tough times, folks don't retire even beyond their retirement age. So all our plan is saying is we're giving an incentive to those who have now passed retirement age, are eligible for retirement, to give them an additional incentive to actually take that retirement. So it's a much more economical way of saving some money. The early retirements tend to cost you a lot of money up front, and this is not an early retirement plan. So that's been somewhat misrepresented in the press.
Okay. Earlier this week, you met with the chairs of the Senate Spending Committee and the Taxing Committee. There apparently was some pushback from them on you inserting yourself kind of late in the process here. My understanding is it was a meeting that did not go terribly well.
That's really not true, my judgment. Let me just tell you how I was there. Let me tell you what really happened.
People that were in the room.
This is how it really works. This is the time of year where governors and legislators have to sit down and try to figure out what makes sense. As I just explained, it became clear that they're not embracing my plan for reducing health care costs. So I needed to sit down with them and say, listen, before you pass your budget, because of you're not adopting all the choices that I proposed in January, which is perfectly reasonable of them, we're in a different position than I hoped that we would be. We've got to cut an additional $10 million. Now, I can tell you that both the Speaker and the President Pro Tem indicated that they, too, had concerns that we were spending too much.
Okay, so everybody's on the same page.
I wouldn't say everyone's on the same page. It's a time of year where there's high emotions in a building, but what our emotions should be focused on is what's best for Vermonters, and that's what I was hired to do. So really what I'm saying is let's take the spirit that we know that things aren't exactly as I presented them in January, and let's come out with a sensible plan. And the sensible plan is to find additional cuts, not ask Vermonters to pay higher taxes in areas where it's really going to hurt our economy. And I believe when you take away home mortgage deductions, charitable deductions, and health care deductions, you're hurting Vermont.
So you don't feel you waited too late in the process here?
No, I don't. And frankly, I've been in this building a long time. I can remember going through exactly the same process with Howard Dean when Governor Dean was, when we were about to pass our budget out of the Senate, with Governor Douglas almost every single time. I think that's how it works.
We're going to talk with Brady Tensing coming up, talk about this complaint he's filed against the Attorney General. You were not really inclined a week or so ago to even read the complaint, get involved in it. What changed for you on this?
Well, I don't think it's fair to say I wasn't inclined to read the complaint.
Well,
what
you said you wanted to deal with it after the legislature was over.
Exactly, and I still haven't had time to read the complaint. But, you know, obviously I think there's broad consensus including with the Attorney General, that he would like to have this matter looked into by someone objective, so that the public can have assurance that everything was done in an appropriate way. So, you know, I am happy to join that consensus. I'm working with the state attorneys right now to try find an appropriate person to get to the bottom of this. And, you know, I think it's helpful to the Office of Attorney General as well as to Bill Sorrell to have some objective folks look at it.
What do you think of Bernie Sanders running for president?
I wish him luck. I admire Bernie tremendously. What I really am happy about for Democrats is that Bernie is better than anybody that I know at articulating the case that America can't work when you have 1 or 2% of the folks in this country accumulating all of the wealth and the middle class and the rest of America continuing to get kicked in the teeth. And no one does it better than Bernie. It's going to be a really important part of the Democratic nomination process, and I'm really happy that he's chosen to do it, because this is, I'm sure, you know, it's not all roses and confetti running for president of the United States. It's a tough, tough thing to do.
Sounds like the message you're trying to get out to people today is that the legislature is taxing too much. Is that what I'm hearing correctly?
I think that in light of the fact that we are not adopting the funding sources that I had proposed to really draw down federal money to help us help our health care providers serve our lowest income health care folks, that it is absolutely clear that we need to make further cuts in the budget instead of raising $36 million in taxes.
The Speaker this morning expressing some concern about the pace of the Senate, that he'd like to see the education bill come back, the Lake bill come back. There's one other one that I can't remember now. Are you happy with the pace of where things are going?
Well, I'm optimistic that we're going to get the agenda, that we're going to get 90% of the agenda that I laid out in January, and that is cleaning up Lake Champlain, a bill that really makes a difference. Our energy bill that's going to move us to the next round of renewable energy jobs and smart energy policy. A bill that balances our budgets, which we're going to get, looks like. And obviously a bill that takes on the real challenge we've been facing for years of education spending and quality being diminished because we haven't right-sized the ship. These are all really tough issues. None of them will be highly popular with the public because these are really tough choices we're making, but they're incredibly important to Vermont, and I share the Speaker and the President pro tem's concerns that we can't go home without those initiatives.
Are you going to veto that tax bill?
Well, you know me. I take the advice of former governors and never suggesting what I would veto and what I wouldn't. What I can tell you is I don't know what the tax bill will be yet, and my job now is to work together with the legislature to come up with a spending plan and a tax bill that puts us on a sustainable spending path and doesn't bankrupt Vermonters while we're doing it. And, you know, again, going to the kitchen table of Vermonters having a conversation right now, if you look at the tax proposals that are being made cumulatively in this building, there's legitimate concern, and should be, that, you know, we seem to have this view that Vermonters can just, you know, be taxed and taxed and taxed on things that help our economy. So taking away deductions that help us grow jobs, grow the economy, help our quality of life, and then invent some new taxes. You know, are we really going to tax water?
We'll leave on that note. Thank you for
Thanks
your time.
For having me.
All right. Governor Shulman joining us here live at the State House in Montpelier. We'll take a short break. We'll be back right after this.
Tired of grocery shopping at huge supermarkets with no personality? This is Tom Mihiron, and I invite you to shop our well-stocked, right-sized family market in Waitsfield. Custom-cut meats, fresh seafood and produce, gourmet cheeses, regular and organic groceries, and over 1,000 wines. Come and see Jeff and Bill in the meat department, Tana in produce, Gary in seafood, Nate in the deli, or Nancy and Liz in our incredible wine department. Family-run for over 70 years. Mihiron Supermarket, Village Square Shopping Center in Waitsfield.
Northfield.
This Sunday, the Merchants Bank presents opening day of Thunder Road in Barrie, Vermont. The American-Canadian Tour Stars will take on the best of the Thunder Road late model teams in the 17th annual Merchants Bank 150 Championship Stock Car Race. ACT stars Helliwell, Pohl, Hebert will take on the pride of Thunder Road. Derek O'Donnell, Nick Sweet, Phil Scott. Bond Auto Tigers and Alan Lover Street Stocks will join in opening day ceremonies this Sunday. But first, be sure to visit downtown Barrie this Saturday morning from 9 till noon for the Merchants Bank annual car show. Returning to Barrie for the first time in 2 years, it's the Catamount Pipe Band and the Race Car Parade at high noon from downtown up to Thunder Road on Quarry Hill. Annual Class Day begins this Sunday at 1 p.m. to start racing festivities. Then all the excitement of 2015 race season begins on the high banks of Thunder Road in Barrie. It's opening weekend this Sunday. Gates open at 10. Post time is 1 p.m. for Class Day. Adult admission is only $25. Kids 12 and under are free. Don't miss it. Be a part of the most powerful sport on earth. It's the Merchants Bank 150 this Sunday at Thunder Road. Let the season begin.
Attention Vermont residents. Since 2004, Lamoille Valley Ford has proudly provided free scheduled maintenance to all active military, National Guard, and Reserve as our way of saying thanks. While our commitment to the military is ongoing, in each quarter of this year, Lamoille Valley Ford will also recognize some of our hometown heroes. During the months of April, May, and June, Lamoille Valley Ford would like to recognize and say thanks to all school teachers. Teachers are not just educators to our children. They are mentors, coaches, and counselors, and we are grateful for their unselfish commitment. So to all school teachers, through the end of June, no matter what brand vehicle you drive or where you bought it, Lamoille Valley Ford will provide you with your next oil change, tire rotation, state inspection, brake inspection, and more at no cost to you and with no strings attached. Call today for an appointment or drive Route 14, 15, or 16 to Lamoille Valley Ford in Hardwick. At Lamoille Valley Ford, we know our teachers matter.
I love Hunger Mountain Co-op because of the organic and high-quality food I get there. I'm Fred Chayette from Orange, Vermont, and I've been a member owner of Hunger Mountain Co-op since 1982.
Back at the State S in Montpelier. Thank you for joining us this morning on the program. We are going to switch topics here. Well, not really. We were just asking Governor Shumlin about the Attorney General Bill Sorrell. Joining us right now is, let's give a nice warm media Vermont welcome this morning to Brady Tenzing. Brady is an attorney in Chittenden County. And want to note the Attorney General will be joining us on the program coming up on Tuesday. Thank you for joining us. How are you this morning?
I'm doing well, Mark. Thank you for having me.
Can you, for our listeners that are not familiar with who you are, you are now a member of the leadership in the Vermont Republican Party, but give us a little bit about your background. What sort of legal work have you done in the past?
Well, true. I'm the vice chair of the Vermont Republican Party, and I grew up in Vermont and came back to Vermont after practicing law in Washington, D.C. for a number of years. I used to be a legislative aide to Senator Warren Rudman from New Hampshire. I don't know if you recall Senator Rudman.
Oh, yeah.
We specialize in white-collar criminal litigation, and now we're doing some work up here, and I'm enjoying myself in Vermont.
Talk about some of the other cases, I guess I would say, that you've been involved in before. I remember you had some involvement with the Burlington College and the land purchase up there. So what do you get involved in terms of politics here in Vermont?
As vice chair in the Republican Party, it's really just sort of a ceremonial post. So I'm kind of like Gilligan on the SS Minnow. But as far as the work I do it as a citizen. I under Vermont law, you're able to use the Vermont Public Records Act to request public documents from government officials, and that's what I've been doing.
Looking for what would you describe?
I'm not really looking for anything. I'm looking for how government works. I'm looking to see how different transactions have taken place. These are public records. We're entitled to see them. Reporters use it every day. It's called the Sunshine Law. It's heavily supported by Senator Patrick Leahy. He's done great work down in Washington, D.C. to support the federal version of it, which is called a Freedom of Information Act.
Okay, let's talk about the Attorney General. Your concern is what? In the complaint, you're saying what?
Well, My complaint has four counts to it. One is a count that was left over from 2 years ago in 2012 when General Sorrell cooperated with an outside super PAC and arranged to have that super PAC spend $200,000 in a primary campaign against T.J. Donovan. The second issue is he failed to properly itemize his expenditures on his campaign finance reports. Count three is he improperly used state resources and failed to report campaign contributions from his work with Dean Corin. And then count four is raises issues about some of his work with the Democrat Attorney General's Association and some of the plaintiff's lawyers, where General Sorrell received thousands of dollars in campaign contributions and then turned around and gave favorable decisions to these same attorneys who were giving him thousands of dollars.
Is the fourth one the most significant of the four?
I think they're all significant. I think taken as a whole, they show an attorney general who's out of touch with his own obligations as the chief law enforcement officer of the state. I think it shows an arrogance. I think in the context of the other enforcement actions that he's taken in Vermont, it shows that he does not believe the rules that he applies to other people apply to him.
Is it improper or illegal to accept campaign contributions from a law firm and then pursue a case that they're pursuing?
Well, that's a good question. And if you look at the laws on bribery, what a jury is allowed to look at when they look at allegations like this, they look at the timing of the payments, and then they look at the timing of the favorable action that the government official may have doled out. Here we've got some suspicious timing. We've got major contributions. Soon afterward, we have the Attorney General meeting with them. And just after that, we have the state of Vermont entering into a contract with these attorneys. We need to look at those documents. We need to look at emails. We need to look at the private attorneys' emails about what they understood those meetings meant. We need to see General Sorrell's private emails to understand what he was doing and what he thought those meetings meant.
So is there a smoking gun out there?
There's certainly a sufficient factual predicate and legal predicate to start an investigation.
Now, you know, people will say, I remember Howard Dean infamously saying that if you give a campaign contribution, it doesn't buy my vote, but it buys you access. So where's the line here? What is acceptable behavior on the part of a politician who receives a campaign contribution? Where's the line?
That is also a good question. If you make a contribution to a candidate, supposedly support their policies, I think the line gets crossed where that contribution is given with ill intent. That contribution is given with the understanding that you're going to have a favorable response from that government official for whatever you want. So that's why it's going to be really important to see the documents that surround these official actions and surround these contributions.
Because the Attorney General has said that he has accepted, I'm oversimplifying this, that he's accepted a large number of campaign contributions and only accepted cases involving law firms that represent a very small portion of his campaign contributions. So it's not like everybody that gives him a campaign contribution gets a case in return. So how would you respond to that?
Well, I'd like to see the emails. I think that the Attorney General should, when these documents are produced in response to this investigation, and they're going to be called for, I'm sure, he should also make them publicly available to the rest of us to review and look at and see what they say. He should also make public the other records that underlie these allegations. For example, the expenditures. He should make available right now the receipts that underlie the expenditures that he claimed on his campaign finance reports. I'd like to see, what was it that he spent $20,000 on? Are there receipts that underlie those expenses?
Mm-hmm. Go back to this question about the previous race and whether he coordinated this with this Democratic, this national group. Hasn't this already been looked at and settled?
No, it hasn't been looked at all. And it's a great question. So we have the Democrat Attorney General's Association forming a super PAC. And the sole purpose of that super PAC was to support General Sorrell in his primary campaign against a fellow Democrat. So it's supposed to be a Democratic organization, right, to support Democratic candidates. Well, normally, those types of organizations sit out of primaries. Here they became highly involved and spent a record-setting amount of money on behalf of Bill Sorrell. Now, what does that tell you? That tells you that it's not a party group. This group goes out and it supports attorneys general who support its agenda and support the plaintiff's attorneys who donate money to them. Otherwise, they would have sat out the primary and would have said, we support any Democratic attorney general who wins the primary. Instead, they tipped the scales and they won the campaign for Bill Sorrell against T.J. Donovan.
Okay, but these super PACs, from what I've been reading about them, I mean, this idea that there's actually a real distinction between them and the candidate is a myth. I mean, it's just not true. I mean, you've got in the presidential races, you've got people that used to work for candidates now working for the super PACs. So, I mean, is there really anything there?
This goes to the hypocrisy issue. Right? General Sorrell enforces the laws in the state of Vermont. General Sorrell has gone against other organizations and other super PACs claiming that they violated Vermont law. The DAGA, Democratic Attorney General's Association, in its super PAC, CJF super PAC, did the exact same thing as the Republican Governors Association did in the governor's race in 2010. General Sorrell investigated them. General Sorrell brought charges against them. And just about a month ago, he settled the case against them. Those same deputies who brought that case in General Sorrell were part of making the decision not to bring an investigation against DAGA and its CJF Super PAC. You can see reporting by Andy Bromwich on October 24th in 7 days, where they raise the question about why didn't this super PAC file campaign reports in Vermont? General Sorrell's deputy, who's brought a lot of these enforcement actions, said, we don't bring cases unless someone files a complaint. Well, just 2 weeks before that, a complaint had been filed with General Sorrell's office complaining about DAG and its failure to file a report. Why didn't they pursue that case then? Why didn't General Sorrell recuse himself from a request to investigate himself? Why is this different?
How is this not going to be interpreted as a Republican operative on a witch hunt?
My complaint is based on evidence and facts that have been brought out under Public Records Act requests, by the way, and hardworking reporting by Paul Heintz. And this General Sorrell, it's an open secret that General Sorrell's not running again. I mean, I'm sure you've heard it. It's rampant in this building. It's rampant amongst attorneys that he's not running again. So this is about good government and about holding our chief law enforcement officer accountable for his conduct.
Let me give you the headphones here. We go to the phone, 244-1777. That's our local number in central Vermont. And you can also reach us on our toll-free lines at 877-291-8255. We go to Moncton and Fred. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I've known Private Sorrell since he's been playing. I played football with Private Sorrell a long time ago.
Okay, you played football with him. All right.
He was the same guy then as he is now. He's a true blue, honest, good Vermonter from a good political family. He's been here all his life. Where this guy comes in and starts throwing these daggers at a good local guy like this just seems like it's just he's throwing something up against the wall that's not going to stick. Billy Sorrell is beloved here in Vermont. He's a good fella. And maybe that Billy's got a Porsche and this guy's driving a Yugo or something. I don't know what the deal is. But he's got a bad bone against Billy, and you can see it through the whole interview. So
I'm going to
leave my two cents in because I don't know Bill well anymore, but he's a good fella.
All right. Thank you, Fred. I appreciate your call.
I missed the preamble.
Well, he said that he played football with him. That's all you missed.
Okay. Bill Sorrell has brought these types of charges against other candidates in Vermont. He sat across the table from me and bragged how he was going to bury Brian Doobie in legal fees if we didn't settle. Now, to Brian's credit, Brian refused to settle at that stage. He has brought these cases against... Look what he's doing to Dean Corin. Now, okay, I'm no... You can imagine I don't support Dean Corin's political views.
Right.
But you know what? I support his insertion into the process to express his ideas. What does that do to other candidates? When the Attorney General of Vermont, over a $250 email, brings a case against him and is trying to extract $70,000 in penalties, it doesn't sound like a good guy to me.
He says that's the rules as they've been set up here, and that he's been claiming that he's been trying to change those, too, and get the up to in there.
Yeah, I heard him say that. That's absolutely absurd and ridiculous. He could settle it this afternoon if he chose to. I bet he could call up Dean Corin's attorney and say, listen, I know we're disputing these issues in this case. We want to avoid the costs of litigation going forward. How about we settle this for a reasonable amount? He could do it this afternoon.
How confident are you that even if somebody is appointed by the governor and state's attorneys, that this is going to be an investigation that's done independently and objectively?
Well, at the government ops hearing this week, I found it remarkable that the attorney general came in there and said that he himself was thinking of appointing an independent counsel and couldn't believe that anybody would question that appointment. I believe that the governor's going to appoint somebody who's independent. There's plenty of good lawyers in this state, plenty of independent lawyers. There may be a retired judge who could do this investigation. I feel confident that this process will work, that we're moving forward. I mean, this, you know, keep in mind, we're in new territory here. This has not happened before. There's, in my knowledge, there's never been an independent counsel appointed to investigate a statewide officer. So I think the precedent we set here is important. And that caller earlier, I think it's important that you keep in mind that General Sorrell has treated fellow Vermonters terribly in his enforcement of these campaign finance rules. He's done irreparable harm to the First Amendment, and he's done terrible harm to bringing in other Vermont citizens into the political process. He's successfully scared a number of people off, and he's made it hard for us lawyers to advise our clients on where the line is drawn, so that we end up drawing the line well inside of what is permissible First Amendment activity.
Do you think, in terms of the campaign contributions that he received from these law firms and then pursued cases that they were involved in, is he corrupt?
Is General Sorrell corrupt? We need to look at the documents. We need to see what those say. I'm not ready to put a label on General Sorrell like that right now about those transactions. We need to see what the evidence says.
Okay. So it isn't a case where you feel you have a lock solid case. There's a little bit of fishing involved here. Fair to say?
No, I don't think the fishing term is a correct term. It's often used to denote somebody who has no basis for looking into something. But there is a basis. Even the general admitted it. He's agreed to appoint an independent counsel. There is smoke here, and we need to look behind it and see what underlies it. Now, you know, just and on these other counts, on DAGA, and if you look at my submission, and I think anybody listening can get access to that submission. I know 7 Days has it posted on their website, and they can look at the evidence that's
in this that's in just on any one of these counts, they can look at the evidence themselves.
Do you think this will actually be completed by the time the next election happens?
I don't know. It probably depends on how quickly General Sorrell responds to requests when the independent counsel is appointed. I think General Sorrell will control a lot of how fast this happens.
Okay. What else are you watching out for here in this process?
Okay, so I have, right now, I also have a Public Records Act request that I submitted with my complaint to General Sorrell. So I expect to be getting those documents either later today or Monday. They invoked a 10-day extension request, and so I'm waiting to see what those documents say. I'm waiting to see what all these documents say. Paul Heinz did in his latest article, he made a report about how General Sorrell had solicited from these private plaintiff's attorneys that they pay for a plane ride for him from California to Oregon so he could take a vacation diversion. I mean, those are the kinds of things that need to be looked at, and they need to be looked at in the context. You need to put a chronology together. White collar cases like this, they're massive document cases, right? So you need to get all that in front of you. You need to develop your chronology, and you need to investigate and talk to people. General Sorrell needs to be put under oath. People in his office need to be put under oath. People at these other firms need to be put under oath, and they need to be deposed and asked these questions.
Thank you for your time this morning. I appreciate it very much.
Thank you for having me.
Brady Tensing is an attorney in Burlington, or in Chittenden County. Also, as you heard him mention, he's with the Vermont Republican Party, filed a complaint against Attorney General Bill Sorrell. We'll take a short break. We'll be back right after this.
It's the 18th Annual Newspapers in Education Benefit Golf Tournament, Saturday, May 9th at the Neshobee Golf Course in Brandon, Vermont. Newspapers in Education is a worldwide program that encourages teachers to use our hometown newspapers for instruction in their classrooms. Your participation helps make this program work. So come out and hit the links for a good cause. The cost is $70 a person or $280 per team and includes lunch and golf. To get your registration form, look online at rutlandherald.com or timesargus.com, or stop into the offices of the Rutland Herald or the Times Argus. The deadline to register is this Wednesday, May 6th at noon. So get your registration form online at rutlandherald.com or timesargus.com. And if you have any questions about the tournament or the program it benefits, call Melody Hudson at 802-477-4026. The Newspapers and Education Benefits Golf Tournament. It's a hole-in-one.
Get ready for the Vermont Chamber Business and Industry Expo, featuring a redesigned event format. Join us for one full business day of networking and seminars on Thursday, May 21st at the Sheraton Burlington. As the region's largest B2B trade show, Expo is the perfect platform to network with over 3,000 business attendees and exhibitors. Visit an expert in the new Digital Marketing Hub, sponsored by Dealer.com, and make sure to register early for tickets to the Senator Leahy Business Breakfast and TD Bank Innovation Institute. Visit VTExpo.com to register today.
Hi, this is Kathy.
And this is Kate, and we are excited to announce the opening of our new women's clothing store, Ruelle Boutique, offering a new shopping experience in historic downtown Waterbury.
At Ruelle, you will find fun, fresh, and trendy styles. Yes, something for everyone, all at a great price.
Some of our clothing brands include Dylan, Mystery, Downey's Basics, Charisma, Yoga Jeans, Shoes by Springstep and Anu, and Tidewater Flip Flops.
Complete your wardrobe with our stylish accessories, including hobo handbags and wallets, M-Rena layering tees and leggings, hanky-panky undergarments, kitsch jewelry and hair ties, plus scarves, hats, and that perfect shade of lip gloss.
Ruelle's grand opening is May 2nd at 11 o'clock with a welcoming reception from 4 to 8 p.m., serving hors d'oeuvres and sweet treats.
We look forward to seeing you at Ruelle Boutique. It's fun, it's fresh, and you'll love the way you dress. Find us at 21 Stowe Street in historic downtown Waterbury.
Back at the status in Montpelier. Let's give a nice home radio Vermont welcome. Joining us right now is Steve Howard, who I mentioned before during our discussion with the governor, is the executive director of the Vermont State Employees Association. Gosh, I don't even know where to begin. What you know, the governor, I know you felt, has not been completely accurate in how he's described how state employees have dealt with previous administrations. Maybe we could start there.
Sure. So state employees have always done their part to help Vermonters balance their state budget. And in this budget, we have come up with, we offered over $20 million in cost savings proposals. $4.5 million that are in the budget are a direct result of our members bringing ideas to the table. So the governor is just not accurate when he says that we haven't contributed here. The other issue that I think is really of importance is the governor says the state employees want Vermonters to pay higher taxes. The truth is, we're not asking working class, middle class Vermonters to pay higher taxes. We're asking the wealthiest Vermonters to pay higher taxes. And we put forward a comprehensive $32 million revenue enhancement plan that was based on asking the wealthiest of Vermonters who have had all the economic gains in the last 10 years to contribute more, and out-of-staters visiting the state. Protect public services, deliver services to middle-class Vermonters, protect the middle-class Vermonters that make up the state workforce, ask the wealthiest and the folks who visit Vermont to make a contribution to invest. The other thing I think is really key and really important, you know, we've only been asked once in the history of the VSEA to open our contract, other than by Governor Shumlin, and that was by Governor Douglas, and that was when the revenues were retreating by almost 15%. Mm-hmm. This year, revenues are growing. This is not a question of a massive decline in revenue that we saw at the beginning of the Great Recession. This is really a management issue. State employees are not responsible for this deficit, but we are stepping up and have stepped up to bring solutions to the table. We continue to do that. So it's just not accurate. It's not fair to the state workforce to say that we're playing the role that he described.
When the governor says that the same thing happened under Governor Dean and Snelling, and then he mentions Governor Douglas too, what happened under Snelling and Dean that he's referring to?
There were always negotiations with those governors, but they never came to us and said, hey, look, I agreed to this contract. I signed this contract. I negotiated this contract in good faith, and now I want to walk away from that commitment. That never happened. It only happened once in Governor Douglas's term when the floor of the economy basically collapsed. So it's just not an accurate portrayal of what happened in history. You know, I had a long discussion with our bargaining unit chairs who have been around for quite a while, and that was the only example in their memory of ever being asked to open the contract. We are not going to open this contract. We bargained this contract in good faith. The governor should maintain his commitment. But frankly, the middle class families who plow our roads, who take care of our veterans at the veterans home, who are the administrative assistants who answer the phones all throughout state government, the folks at Vermont Health Connect who have been dealing with that disaster, not in a position economically to take money out of their paychecks, middle-class families who run state government, in order to help balance the state budget. But you know, the wealthiest Vermonters are, and we're asking that the protection that has been sort of given to that group of Vermonters who have had all the economic gains for decades, just be that should be reviewed.
What about this argument that's a very small number of people and you jeopardize having them leave?
You know, what we have to do to make our economy sustainable is build a strong middle class. We're not going to build a strong middle class and have a sustainable revenue source if we continue to tax people whose incomes are declining. We know that if we go where incomes are growing, we can actually fix the problem Vermonters are facing. We have a revenue problem. Senator Ash is absolutely right. We need to reform the revenue system. It's not a spending problem, it's a revenue problem. And so we're saying, let's go where the revenue is growing. The top 20% of Vermont income earners from between 2010 and 2013 saw their incomes grow by 5.9%. At the same time, middle class Vermonters saw their incomes drop by almost 3%. So we're saying it's time to really take a look at how we collect revenues so that we have enough money to support things like the Veterans Home, things like Community High School of Vermont. So snowplow drivers who make it possible for tourists to visit our ski areas in the winter can have a decent living wage. That's really what this discussion is about.
Has the governor been disrespectful?
I think this latest proposal has been something that our members would find less than respectful. It really has been something that was dropped at the last minute. It wasn't well thought out. We negotiated and worked with the administration. We continue to work with the administration to find savings to the early retirement incentive, some of those other savings ideas. We continue to work with them. So it's not fair and it's not accurate to say that we haven't played a constructive role. And we thought we had an agreement. We hope we still do. The administration said that they thought they could balance the budget with fewer than 50 RIFs. We are going to take them at their word. And I hope Vermonters will hold them accountable to that.
Thank you for your time this morning. Appreciate it. Steve Howard is the executive director of the Vermont State Employees Association. That's going to wrap things up for today. Thank you very much for joining us. Have a great weekend, everybody. Come back and join us same time, same place, Monday, right here on FM 96.1 WDEV Warren, broadcasting from the top of Sugar Bush, 96.5 in Barrie and Montpelier, 101.9 in the Northeast Kingdom, and AM 550 WDEV Waterbury, Montpelier.
Black man who died in custody in Baltimore 2 weeks ago.
The findings of our comprehensive, thorough, and independent investigation, coupled with the medical examiner's determination that Mr. Gray's death was a homicide, which we received today, has led us to believe that we have probably